it. Alright, anger. Okay, so we're talking about anger today. So, Siravolbi, the seventh peric, right? Mahukas, what's anger? I'm trying to. What's anger? Huh? What's anger? Why do you get anger? Kas. Kas is anger.
Well, we had a shear a couple of weeks ago by Rabbi Kong, described anger as unacceptable.
That's the definition. That's the definition of anger. That's the definition.
Why do you want to go to Zara?
Okay, we'll explain that one as well. First of all, okay, so what's anger? So Revolvi says, Mila Lachesed is understood to us, right? I mean, you got the whole shir, but I'll explain to you. Okay. Mila Lachesed is understood to us, says Revolvi. It's one of the midas of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Olam Chesed Yibam. The world was built on Chesed. A person builds his own world through Chesed. That when we, if we do Chesed, we explain that. Your world is built through Chesed. That Revolvi himself explains that when he does Midas of Chesed. But anger. Now, why does Revolvi, when he speaks about anger, talk about Chesed? Why does he pick that as an example? Because they're opposites. Anger is Midas Hadin. If you live with Midas HaChesed, you will not be angry. So therefore, Yisrael Salanta says, if you want to work on Midas HaKas, you put yourself in a mode of Chesed. That means, Chesed means to be giving. If you're giving, you're not going to be hurt in any way if someone doesn't do your will or does something against you. Because you're giving to them, you're not expecting anything from them. You understand? And also the process of giving, when you give to someone, right? You automatically focus outside of self. So when you focus outside of self, you're not focusing on your inner self. And so you tend less to be angry. I mean, we're human beings. So, you know, even when we're in a giving position, we can still think both feelings. Yeah? But generally speaking, the time when you're giving, you're looking outside yourself, you're not looking inside yourself. You understand? So that's why Revolvi picks. It's the opposite of anger. Now, definitely our anger isn't one of the midas of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, he says, Revolvi. What does an angry person do? He destroys his world and he destroys himself. That's what Revolvi says. Anger is basically destruction of a person's world and a destruction of a person himself. This is not one of the good aspects of man. Now, he brings you, I'm skipping a little bit, okay? He brings you a very famous Zohar, right? The Zohar says, when a person gets angry, what happens to him? His neshama leaves him, his soul leaves him, I mean it doesn't leave him completely, but the higher aspects of his neshama leaves him, and he's left with... The Shaman represents purity, so when the Shaman leaves him, he's left in, so to speak, impure state. Right? Now that's a pretty bad situation. The Ramban, in the Igeret Ramban says, when a person's angry, kol minei gehinam sholtin abo. All forms of gehinam, right, happen, are influenced on him. Doesn't sound good. Right? Doesn't sound good. The Nefesh HaChaim says, when a person does a mitzvah, however, the Ruach of Gan Eden, the spirit of Gan Eden, is encompassing him. So we see that anger is a very, very negative thing. Right? Spiritually, it seems a terrible thing. We have another Gemara, the Gemara in Shabbos. What does the Gemara in Shabbos say? When a person's angry, hakoreya, right? Someone tears. You learn Korea now? Bechamato, right? What happens? It's ki'ilu, it's as if he serves a Avodah Zarah. El Zah Bekirbo. He has an El Zah, that's what Zohar says. He has a foreign god in his midst. No, that's, I think, it's a Gemara. So, yeah, it's a Gemara, yeah, it's a Gemara. Yeah, that's a Gemara. It's playing the Gemara. Gemara and Shabbos. Right? The Mishnah says, the Zohar also speaks about he speaks about it's the same thing. He speaks about bad things, Sholet, like the Rambam, bad things are with him. Sitra Akra, the Zohar. Okay, anyway. So anger is a pretty bad thing. Right? Now, let's go back to what you heard. And that's the real truth. What does anger mean? So I'm going to give an analogy. Now, there's two types of anger. Because there's two types of people. There's a person who feels anger because he feels hurt. Right? That's one form of anger. And when a person feels hurt, he feels attacked. And the normal mode for when a person feels attacked is to attack back. That's the anger he feels. I mean, he's in an attack mode. Right? There's another form of anger, right? Which is, I think probably we less have it, which is a more calm form of anger. The person himself will not be angry in a rage anger, will be angry in a thinking way. That's like a cold form of anger. I.e., what does that mean? He'll feel someone's intruding on his dominion. Right? And because he feels a lack of control in where he is, he'll want to get control. But if a person's insecure of where he's holding, and he feels someone's intruding on his space, he'll feel lack of control of his life, of his space, whatever it is, he'll feel that person intruding, he'll want to gain control. Now that anger won't be an outburst. It won't be a rage, because this person's a person who's in control. It sometimes can come in an outburst. It can come in that form, but it's a different form of anger. It's a form of anger that you feel you're losing control, and the person will try and gain control. It's a colder form of anger. Most of us don't have that form of anger. It usually happens with people who are insecure somewhat, and they have to be always in control of the situation, and if they feel they're not in control of that situation, they do things to gain the control, and they do things in an angry way, and means in not a thinking way. It doesn't mean they haven't thought about things. They've thought them out. They might even plan things out. They might even work things out, but it comes from a place of insecurity, and it comes from a place of anger. And these people will be angry at the other person who they think is taking their space. You understand? That's a different form of anger. Most of us don't suffer with that anger unless we're controlling people. We're so insecure, we have to control our environment. I'm not going to speak about that anger. That's a deeper problem. That's a problem which is uprooted in insecurities, very deep insecurities, to the extent the person doesn't even realize he has them sometimes. That's an anger which a person, you'd have to go to a shrink for that one. We're speaking about the anger that most of us have, that we feel hurt. Yeah.
Before we go on, you said that the person that has that type of anger wants to get control over his space or situation around him. Right. Does this have to relate to Rabbi Noah wanted to touch on the 5 levels of pleasure? He said in the second level of pleasure, is power. And
there's power.
Yeah, one of the most one of the worst sort of things that you can use for pleasure.
Power, yeah.
So,
it's related to to anger. Anger, the media of anger comes from the comes. You have what's called four. You have four yisodot. You have four foundations in a man. You've heard of these things. You have alpha, ruach. Alpha means dirt, like dust, dirt. Ruach means wind. Then you have mayim, is water, and you have eish, right? Afa is associated with, I mean, the bad aspect of Afa. This is Reb Chaim Vital says this. Reb Chaim Vital in Sefer Shari Kedusha. You know who Reb Chaim Vital is? You have the Sefer. You probably have it in the Yeshiva. Reb Chaim Vital was the Talmud of the Arizal. Yeah? You ever heard of it? Shari Kedusha, you have it? You probably have it in the Yeshiva. I'm sure you have it here as well. Huh? Okay, so he speaks about it. So he says, he's speaking about the bad aspects. There's also good aspects of these midas. We're not going to go into them. But that, speaking about Afa, is speaking about, he says, the bad aspect of Afa is depression, right? Or atzlus, or what is it? Atzlus is laziness, right? He's lazy, it's hard for him to get up, right? Then you have Ruach. Ruach, the bad aspect of Ruach is Diburim Ra'im, speaking bad words, or Batalim, just speaking all the time. That's Ruach, that's the wind, right? You know? The wind, right? Ruach is associated with Dibul, right? V'yitach ba'apa Ruach Chaim, right? I didn't explain why Afa is, it can also be depression, right? Because basically Afa is very, you know, it's base. It's very, you know, low down, right? Okay. Then there's Mayim. Mayim, he says, is avasatanugim, desires, right? The person has excess desires that comes from the middle of mayim. Yeah. It's the opposite of chesed. It's the same thing. When we do chesed, we'll do that one. But we're doing anger, so I'm going to extrapolate on the fourth one, which is eish. Eish is, the bad aspect of eish is gava. It's arrogance and kas and anger. Because Eish wants everything to be Eish. Eish takes something and makes it all into Eish. Right? You can understand why Eish is anger. Right? The Gemara says, Lo tevaru Eish b'chol moshvotekin b'yom ha-Shabbat. Don't make a fire in your dwelling places on Shabbos. It means don't get angry. Anger is a bad thing to do on Shabbos. Don't get angry on Shabbos. Because Shabbos is a very special day. It's a very high spiritual day. If you don't get angry on a Shabbos, you're going to lose all your spiritual connection. Because that's what happens to you when you get angry. You disconnect your neshama from your goof. You understand? So it's a special day on Shabbos. On Shabbos you're getting a very high level of spirituality. You get your extra neshama on Shabbos. Right? Okay. Now, that's the concept of anger. So we're going to go back and we're going to speak about the anger, which is a person feeling hurt. That's usually most of our angers. We come down to it, we're feeling hurt. Now, let's take an example, and we're coming back, we can come back to it. Let's take an example. Take a person who's, what's the opposite of anger? Savlanut. What's savlanut? No, not such. Savlanut means lisbol, it means to be patient, but it means, literally it means to be sovel something, to take a weight, to be able to hold the weight. In modern Hebrew, you call these people who carry heavy loads, sabal. Someone who's carrying a heavy load is a sabal, right? Sabal is these movers. How do you call these movers? These people who move heavy furniture, you call it sabal. They're holding a heavy weight on them. The opposite of anger is to hold a weight. Right? Now I'm going to explain. Just to be able to hold the weight. Now I'm going to explain this to you. I'm going to say an analogy. You have a high cliff or high mountain to climb up. Now, I'm not going to make it easy for you. I'm going to give you a very heavy backpack. Right? The backpack is so heavy that by the time you walk like a quarter of the way up, all you're dreaming about is getting this backpack off your back. So now, you're quarter of the way up, what happens to you? What would you do? You're going to try and get this backpack off your back. Right? So you try moving it. You try disattaching it. Right? It doesn't work. It's stuck there with super glue. Right? It's not working. This backpack is still on you. You're still trying. It's going away? No. What's happening to you? Getting frustrated. You're trying again. It's still not happening to you. You tried so much, what's going to happen in the end? You're going to get so frustrated and say, the hell, you know, like, forget this, right? You'll just sit there and you won't move, right? There'll be a little bit of depression also. What do I need is backpack on me? What do I have is backpack on me? That's all I need, a backpack to walk this heavy, this way? Now, if a person had savlanut, that means he had the ability to walk with this load on him, he wouldn't get this anger. He would be angry with his backpack. I'd be moving it off. It'd be hard for him to move off. He'd be getting angry. And then eventually the anger would lead to some level of depression. Right? If a person had the ability to be sovel, the ability to go on with this weight on him, he wouldn't get angry. Correct? So savlanut is the ability to hold that load. Now we'll go back to our previous definition. Now let's take it life. Some people come and say, you know, they come, some people are very like upset about their lives. They say, why did this happen to me in my life? Or why this? Or why that? And they have this heavy load called life on their backpack. And what do they want to do? Get rid of it. Or drink and forget about it, right? Okay, whatever. But they want to get rid of it. However the way is to get rid of it, they want to get rid of it. Right? What's going to happen when they try to get rid of it? First of all, it's super glue. It's not going to get rid of. Because who gave you this backpack? Who gave you your life? Not God. We're in yeshiva now. God gave you your life, right? Let's assume it. Let's axiom. Right?
That's fine. Good axiom,
alright? And God gave you, when I say God gave you your life, I'm thinking about what happens to you in your life. Obviously, if you do certain things, you can influence what happens to you. But certain things, like, you know, who your parents are, which, you know, lots of things in life, you cannot be influenced. Were you born from? Were you not born from? This happened to you. Who your brothers and sisters are. All sorts of things. Right? Most of the things in our lives, we cannot influence the change of them. Anything to do with other people, generally speaking, we cannot influence the change. So what do we have to do? We have to be accepting of them. We have to be sovel them. Now that sounds terrible. That sounds, Rabbi, you mean to tell me Jewish version of life is walking a high cliff with a backpack on? That doesn't sound so great for me. No, it isn't. Because there's more to it. But let me explain to you. If God gave you this backpack, there's a reason for it. That's called emunah. If you believe He gave it to you, He gave it to you for a reason. Now we don't know. Everyone has to climb this hill. Because the purpose of life is to get to that top. So if you have a meaning to your life, right? If you know there's a big reason for getting to the top of the hill, will it make it easier or harder for you to walk up with that backpack? Much easier, right? If I'm telling you you're going to get an ice cream at the top of the hill, and you've got like a few years of walking, then you'll tell me, well, you know, forget it for the ice cream. Well, I'm going to walk this whole hill for a few years. It doesn't seem worth it. But if it's something of value, and it's, you have a clarity about getting that, a clarity of the value, you will have that savlanut. You will have the ability to be a savlan. Now, in order to believe that, you have to have the meaning. You have to have the reasons for going up that hill. So in other words, anger is based on you believing that this backpack that you're holding has meaning to be holding. So you have to have an emunah that God put this backpack on you. That this load that you have, there's a reason behind it. You might not understand it. It might take time to work out. It might even take a few years to work out why you personally have this backpack. And it might be retrospectively, and I'm sure most of you, if you go back, and now you guys in yeshiva, if you go back to a few years ago, you could probably trace back things that happened in your life, maybe even bad things, that brought you to come to yeshiva. And when they happened, it was very frustrating. And now you realize, why, that was actually a good thing. That backpack that I was given those years ago actually brought me here. So if you could see that in part of your past, right? Certainly believe that it could be in your future as well. The problem with accepting these backpacks, what's the problem? That we're very narrow seers. We always see now. When we always see now, the load's very heavy. Even small loads are very heavy. You know, some people, like, he has a problem. Some guy came into his room for a week, and he's driving him insane. Right? So now he's telling the rabbis, like, why did you put this guy in? Can't you get rid of him? He's only there for a week. Yeah? He's only there for a week, but he's driving him insane. Now, if that boy was to think, I'm sure a boy in a few months' time, if we would discuss this guy that was in his room and like bothering him or doing whatever he was doing to him, in a few months' time, he would have forgotten it by then. It wouldn't have made a big difference to his life. Certainly if he thought about it in 10 years' time, he would have even remembered the guy. He probably, if he met the guy in America, he would even be friendly with the guy. Right? I guarantee all these guys that you know today that bother you, when you meet them in America, you'll be friendly with them. They won't even bother you. It's just that you can't help it that this guy gets up for Shacharis to learn Mishnah Berurah an hour before davening, and you want to sleep for another hour, right? And he's bothering you, right? But when you meet him in America, he'll be one of your best friends. If we put things in proper proportion, we also don't get angry. We also gives us the ability to be sober, right? That means we realize this backpack's not so heavy. I have the ability to accept it on me. I won't be, it's not such a pain for me. And it's worth it because there's something good to get on the top of the hill. There's a meaning in this walking. Maybe the whole purpose that I will develop savlanut, that I will develop my midas, I will develop to become more patient. Because when you're going to get married, you're going to have plenty of opportunity. You're going to have a wife and you're going to have kids. Right? And they're going to press all your buttons. Because you're going to have, Bezrat Hashem, lots of them. And they're all going to be different variations of you and your wife. Right? And they're definitely going to have some of your good meters, but also some of the not such good ones. Right? And so each one will be able to press his own individual button. So you have plenty of practice when you're married for all those situations. So why don't you take yeshiva and your roommate and whatever happens in yeshiva, right, as a good workout? I mean, you know, in America, everyone does a workout, right? You want to live a long life, you want a good heart, right? It's interesting that the heart is the thing we're worried about, right? The heart's the place where we need our workouts for. Everyone understands that one, right? A good half an hour walk, some push-ups, right? It's only the rabbis who, you know, like, get this Rosh Hashiva after eating in yeshiva so many years. You only eat in yeshiva 2 years, but we get to see more than 2 years of yeshiva food, right? So we develop this Rosh Hashiva, right? So we need this walking through the heart and whatever, right? But you guys, you understand you have to go for a jog. You understand you have to go on a treadmill. You understand you do the weights or whatever you guys do. Because you want a good heart. Well, if you want a good heart, because the heart's the place of midas, of good characteristics, you also have to do workouts. And if you don't decide to do workouts for yourself, you shouldn't be looking for a workout. But if a workout comes your way, why pass off the opportunity? I mean, it's good for the heart. We understand that. You even look for the workouts in the physical world. You see, the spiritual world is so different. Now that's a positive attitude. Now I'm not saying it's dafka, the workout on a midas and working on our anger. But that's the minimum that this can be teaching us. There might be something deeper there. There might be a specific guy who bothers me. Or a specific thing that bothers me about the yeshiva. Or even a rabbi. I'm sure there's rabbis that maybe bother you. Not in Mochon Yaakov, right? Maybe. Right? But I'm sure everyone has their own little thing. Maybe there's something there that you have to work on, and you're given this to work on when you're in yeshiva, because you know there's a lot of mussar being spoken here. You know, Rabbi Gershenfeld is mussar vat and everything, right? And Rabbi Lin. So maybe it's there for you to work on, right? Okay. So now let's go back to what we said. What happens here? What's anger? Anger, like you said in the beginning, is the inacceptance of your situation, correct? And desire to change your situation, and the inability to change your situation will cause you to be angry. When you're angry, what does that mean? It means you do not believe that this situation is a growth process, and certainly do not believe that it was given to you by God. So therefore, you don't believe God gives you life. I.e. this life is giving you now. So if you don't believe that God's giving you, who is giving it to you? Well, someone's giving it to you. Someone created you, so you're here. Who's giving it to you? Elzar. That's the problem of Elzar. At that moment, you don't have emunah, or not the sufficient level of emunah. That's the perish of the Gemara, Elzar Bekirbo. It's a foreign God in the midst of him. Right? It also explains. Yeah, foreign God means idol worship. It's as if you're serving a foreign God. You're serving a Avodah Zarah, you're serving yourself. My will? I don't want this. I do not want this to happen. I'm going to change the situation. That makes you angry. That makes you into attack mode. You're going to fight this bag. You're going to fight this load. Right? You understand what I'm saying? Make it clear? That also explains, right, what the Zohar says. That your neshama leaves you. What's your neshama? When you do a mitzvah, it gives you life. The neshama is to give you life. When you're not accepting the life that the Kodesh Baruch Hu is giving you, i.e. your neshama, you're pushing your neshama away. That's the pshat in the Zohar. That when you're in accepting of your life, what are you doing? You're pushing your neshama away. That's literally what you're doing. When you're incorporating God's will into your life, what are you doing? You're bringing your neshama into you. That's why when you bring your neshama into you, where does your neshama come from? It comes from Kisei HaKovod, from Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? Therefore you feel the spirit of Gan Eden around you. Make sense? The more you subjugate your life to the will of God, the more the will of God is around you. The more you feel that. That's what it means in Nefesh HaChaim. These aren't like, these Kabbalistic or whatever you want to call them, concepts, not Kabbalistic concepts. These ideas are not hocus pocus ideas. These are real ideas. This is a reality. This is a reality we feel. When the Ramban says, Kol mine gehinim sholtim bo, all the forces of Gehinnom all the types of Gehinnom are in control of him, right? He means that. He means you feel terrible. Because you're removing a neshama from you. What comes in its place? The Zohar says, the other side. Whatever that means. Elza Shebekirbo. It means, what it means, what's dominant in him? Is his neshama dominant in him? Or is his physicality, his goof dominant in him? When you push away your reality, me is the important one. Who's the me? I. It's my physicality. And the neshama gets sent out from you. You understand what I'm saying? That's the pshat in the Zohar. Yeah.
What is the aspect of a person that makes them want to be able to control everything? Like
insecurity, usually. You're speaking about the other angle we're not
saying
talking
like
about.
Because most people would rather be able to control everything all the time. Like, I mean, they, in existence, they'd rather control the entire world. Like, they'd rather
not everyone. I don't think everyone.
I mean, I think most people, instinctively, like, naturally, like, as a, like in a certain way, I would rather be able to, you know, like, you know, move all the stars any way I want. You know, like,
no, but there's different things. It's like, people might want to play with life. You know, it's interesting. You know, you have these computer games, right? So you can drive a car, or I don't know what you can do with it, but you can play, you can, like, I don't know, probably in a few years' time, there'll be a computer game where you can have, you can say, you can, like, let's create the universe. So you pop in a black hole, and boom, it all happens, and then you can fiddle around with the stars, and it'll be a great game, right?
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great game. You know, some people, there will be people who do it in control, right? There will be people who are, you know, control. But probably there's a different aspect also. Probably it's not control, it's curiosity. Sometimes manipulating things because you want to see how it works out. Not because you're interested in controlling. You're interested in what would it do if this happened? What would happen if this happened? That's curiosity. It's not necessarily control. Control, a person who's controlling, he doesn't want anyone to be in, have dominion in where he is. He doesn't want anyone to have any, like, influence on anything that's shaykh to him. Whatever he describes is shaykh to him. Some people have a very broad definition of what's mine. You know? Some people's definition of what's mine is like me. Right? Some people's definition of what's mine is me, my car, my house, my everything that's around them. My company. Right? My secretary, my workers, my... people have different definitions. Depends how controlling you are, how insecure you are. Right? The more insecure you are, the bigger is going to be your definition of me. And the bigger definition of me, the more these people who are in your control and don't live according to the way you want them to be controlled will cause you to be angry. And that doesn't necessarily have to be an anger of hurt, that's an anger of control. I said, we weren't really talking about this anger, but between the two of us, I don't think you have that problem.
No, I'm just wondering, I'm just trying to figure out why, because you're saying, okay, that stems from insecurity. I'm just trying to figure out what aspect, because we were created in God's image, right? So, like, what aspect is that coming from?
Where the positive aspect?
Where we don't, we have to, ultimately, we have to submit to God, right?
Okay, right,
and that's totally opposite of what God is, right? Like, God isn't submitting to anything. So, like, us submitting to God is a totally, like, different...
You're wrong. Chumash. Let's pick up Chumash. What does God say in the creation of man? What does God say?
Let us make man.
What does Rashi say? God consults the angels. Why does God consult the angels? What does Rashi say?
So is modesty.
Why is it great? Or, you know, you didn't realize that one? You didn't realize that God was modest? God's ultimate goodness. Why does Chumash, and why man? Why when he created the animals, God wasn't. So God, when he created man, was modest. And he wasn't modest when he created the animals. Why here he has to be modest? Here, and there's a problem with his modesty. Because by God saying, let us create, it implies that there's two deities. That's what Rashi says. God shows his modesty even at the expense of the Apikorsim, saying there's two creation, there's two creators to the world. Because let us make man, me and my friend. Right?
Yeah.
So even at the expense of misunderstanding who God is, God's willing to show this. Why does he do this in creating a man? Because when you create something and you're showing that midah, that, how you say, that that characteristic, right? And that's how your creation is going to be according to that midah. Man's tachlis, man's purpose is to show that midah of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which is humility. Now if you see the psukim afterwards, the psukim afterwards, then God gives man bracha. Have dominion over the animals. That doesn't sound so modest. So Chazal said the following thing. So it says, V'yirdu b'dgat hayam. Chazal say. It says, Loshen ridui. Loshen of dominion, and Loshen of yirida. It says, when man, yes, goes down, he loses his dominion over the animals. When man is on a higher spiritual level, he's in full control of the animals. What does that mean? It's talking about the animals in general. It's also talking about the animalistic self. What's man's higher level? When man represents his Selam Elohim, if you look at the psukim, it comes out. When man represents his Selam Elohim, which is God's will. God's will means man shows his humility. Then man has dominion over the animals. The Gemara says that an animal does not attack a man unless it's nidmalo, it appears to the animal that this man is an animal. Which is a bigger one, right? Bigger ape, you know. Ape man and then the Nathanael man, just a big ape, right? If man appears to be an animal, right? Then animals would attack him. But when man has Selam Elohim, when man shows his humility and he shows that what he is expressing is the divine will, which that represents Selam Elohim, the form of God. Showing God's will shows that you have the form of God. Then the man has dominion over the animals. That's not a dominion that we think, that you catch an animal and put him in a cage and have dominion over him. Because if you're in the cage with such an animal, you might not come out. So we're talking about a different dominion. You know the stories I'm sure you've heard of Daniel and the lion's den, or the Or HaChaim was throwing the animals and nothing happened, right? That was the reason. Because the animals saw this is a Tzuras Adam, this is a form of man. And therefore an animal will not attack, that's innate to nature.
Like the aspect of humility for the person God. I guess like what exactly is the definition of humility? Like the way I understand it's kind of like knowing where you are and knowing what you could be and realizing like the difference between them.
Humility, I don't understand what humility is. If we're going to speak about it, but
how's that related?
Humility is related to anger. A humble person won't get angry. Generally, emotion, I mean, it won't happen very often. A humble person, I mean, Moshe was a humble Mikol Adam. He was angry, I think, maybe once. But he was angry once. That he forgot the halachas with the Elazar. The Parshas Pinchas, remember? With the Elazar? Okay, doesn't matter. But a humble person generally won't be angry. Why? What does anger mean? Humble means that it says, Moshe Rabbeinu Kumash says he was most humble of all men. Correct? Okay. Then same Chumash says the Karan or Panah, that he had beams of light coming from him. Right? In the beginning he didn't realize it, but eventually he realized it. I mean, he knew he talked to God face to face. He wrote in the Chumash, right? He knew he went up 40 days and 40 nights. He put it in his Chumash, right? No one else did it. He also wrote, Lo Kam Bi Yisrael. There wouldn't be another person who was humble like Moshe. So he knew he's going to be the most humble man, right? He wrote it down in Chumash, right? He knew that. So humility isn't that I am a zero. That's not humility. Humility means that you know who you are. You know that only you spoke to God face to face. you know who you are in the spiritual terms. You're clear about you who you are. You're not shafel. You don't think that you're a zero. You can do no influence to the world. You can't even learn a Gemara. You can't do anything. You know, I'm just a Baal Tshuva. I'm not going to, you know. What can I do, Rabbi? By the end of 2 years in Mochan Yaakov, I don't know if they maybe read a Gemara Rashi Tosis, maybe. Right? And maybe I'll be, what's it called? You know, these guys have been learning for how many years? What, you know, what am I going to be? No, not true. First of all, it's not true. You guys have a lot of potential. A lot of potential, a lot of ways that you could influence the from world in ways that you guys don't even realize yet. You'll see, as time will come. But, first person, in order to be humble, has to realize his potential. Has to realize what's good about him. If you don't realize what's good about you, you only realize what's bad about you, you're not going to be humble. You're going to be maybe a little bit depressed, maybe a little bit unhappy, maybe worried about not succeeding and all sorts of things like that. But you're not going to be humble. Revolver speaks about this also, about in terms of Musa. Musa, we do not learn about how bad we are. You first learn about how good we are. Most people, if you ask them, tell me all your bad traits, they can list them pretty easily. If you ask them, tell me what's your good traits, it won't be so quick. Because if you ask the person what's his good traits, it actually obligates him. People don't like being obligated. Oh, I can't do that, Rabbi. I'm only a first year. Or I'm only a this. Or I'm only a that. Right?
Modest, though?
Yeah, I'm going to get to modest. Modest and humility is similar. So modesty is more about a woman, but it's humility in a woman. But I'm going to explain that the two things are connected. Humility is when I know what I'm good at. And it's true. I'm clear what I'm good at. I really know all my good characteristics. And it's true about me. The difference is that I believe that God gave them to me. That's humility. I didn't make myself this person. Of course, I tried and I worked. You know, I came to Yeshiva and I learned Gemara. Some of my friends are, you know, or wherever they are, back home. So you did make good free will choices. You did do something here. That's why it's always chokhmah, wisdom, is always something that's very hard to be humble about. Because in a sense, you did do that to yourself. I mean, you can be cleverer than someone, but believe me, you can grow in your cleverness. If you work and you learn and you learn and you learn, you become cleverer and cleverer. If you sit and learn Gemara for 10 years, it's not the same as learning Gemara for 2 years. If you spend your time learning and thinking, right? You're going to. It's definitely going to affect you. We know from Tehillim, Torah is Hashem Tamima. The Torah of Hashem is pure. Machkima. It makes wise a petty, a simple person. None of you guys are petties. So Kol Shekhen will be make you guys wiser. You know, it's a known thing. I mean, all the Goyim speak about the Jews being the people of the book. And they know what book they're talking about. Not people of the book of, you know, they didn't... Before, they know the Torah. I mean, they don't know Gemara maybe, but they know that we sit and we learn. We're people of the book. Learning Torah makes us wiser, makes us deeper, makes us more thinking. And believe me, the more you get to think deeply, the more you get to realize that all these things that you have and that you choose and you do, how much you owe to God. How much they come from God. How much, you know, Baruch Hashem, when Yeshiva, when Eretz Yisrael, right? We're learning Torah that some of our great grandfathers would have given their lives to come and learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael. The appreciation we should have for that, that's a form of humility, the gratitude. That brings out humility in a person. Because you've given me so much, God, what can I give to you? If someone saves your life. You wouldn't be able, you wouldn't know how to pay him back. Every time you see him, you'd be like, can I help you? Can I do something? Can I think? Can I? Right? You wouldn't be enough for you to help him back. That comes from humility, realizing also what God gave to you, that God gave it to you. That makes a person humble. So if things don't go exactly as we want them to go, right? We don't get angry about them. Because we got so much. If someone saved your life, right? But when he saved your life, by saving your life, he broke your arm. You gonna get angry about it? No. If someone broke your arm without saving your life, you get angry. You tell him something, right? If you're normal, right? You tell him something. But if someone saved your life and broke your arm, you wouldn't say anything. We sometimes don't appreciate what we have. That's why humility, that's what humility means. You understand that? Now, how is it related? We went back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Humility, modesty. What's modesty? Modesty, the Gemara says, you have to understand, this concept of anger and savlanut and humility are all intertwined, obviously. Right? You understand how they're intertwined? Yeah? Okay. Now. Sorry?
I think so.
Right, okay. Now. Humility comes when I'm accepting God's will and I allow God's will to permeate my life and I don't try and tamper with God's will. I just live according to what He, you know, gives over to me in my life. He gives me hardship, I try and work with that hardship. Not always I can change. If I can change it, okay, go ahead and change it. But not everything you can change. Right? If someone, you know, if a person wants to damage you, say, okay, you don't have to sit around and let them damage you. If it's a person, you can, you know, I can tell him. But if it happens a little bit too often, you see these situations you get, you have to say, something, there's a message here. God wants to teach me something. What message does He want to teach me? Why am I missing the message? Sometimes we're very stubborn. It takes a lot of times, a lot of situations similar for beginners to, like, you know, eventually it'll pop to us. But when we realize behind all these difficulties there's a deep message. And when we did, it's related to joy also. When we did the class on joy, not all of you were here. We spoke about Eizer Kenegdo. There's a nigudim, there's difficulties in life. And the joy is the creative ability of overcoming those difficulties, right, in a creative way. And through that creative way, right, through that creative way, we're going to get to a new concept of self, a new understanding of self. Just as a mountain climber, we spoke about this, just as a mountain climber climbs Everest. It doesn't take a little hill to climb. He climbs the highest mountains. Because now, with all his skills, he can develop his creativity in overcoming Everest. And that gives him a tremendous joy. So life is that way. It's very funny that these difficulties in life, instead of becoming angry with them, they can become our greatest joys. Which is ironic. It's really ironic. But that's the truth in life. And it happens to us only if we have a certain attitude to life. And that attitude to life is, we know that God gave us stuff. We have an emunah. We believe that God gave us, and it's for our good. If God gave us stuff, it's for our good, because God is ultimately good. God doesn't punish in a way that, you know, there's a patch and He wants to hurt us. That's not the punishment of God. God's punishment is to awaken us to a reality or to a change. A change which is good for us. And also, when we're climbing this long hill, or steep mountain, whatever you want to call it, there's a reason for getting to the top. There's a good reason there. We all have our different pathways to get there. And we all have our different, you know, baggages or whatever. We might even pick up baggages on the way. Right? It might get harder the further we get up. Right? Like the Gemara says, to a Rasha, the person who wants to get rid of his baggage, right? It seems like a little chut. A little, his Yetzirah seems like a bit of a string. And to a tzaddik, seems like a big mountain. Because he's always putting on, he was able to climb with this, so let him climb with a little bit more. And he gets a little bit more, and he gets, you know, he becomes a big guy. By the end of the, you know, by the end of the trip, he's this, you know, he's this big guy. He's a god, right? He's a big guy, he's a big Talmud Chacham, right? And he didn't even use hormones.
Can you go back and see a little more detail about, like, my, like, if someone, I say, like, you know, ask, like, what?
Oh, Oh yeah, we'll just be a practice. Yeah, yeah, I'll give you.
But also, like, is it that? Well, that, and then as far as the baggage is concerned, the back that happened, either it becomes lighter, did you notice it less, did you?
I'll tell you something. I'll tell you a simple thing. You know, sometimes you daven, right? I notice it by myself. Sometimes you daven, and you know, everyone likes when they daven to be quiet and no one disturbing them and stuff like that. Sometimes it happens. You daven, and this guy next to you, right? He's like, Hashem, Svatai. And he's like pushing it, he's like going for it, right? And you're trying to daven quietly by yourself, and this guy is going for it, and he's like, I'm like, why is this guy can't be quiet? Can't he daven to Hashem? I mean, God can hear him without him speaking, right? Like, why does this guy just be quiet? He's disturbing me, right? So like, what's our first reaction? Our first reaction is, shh. You look around. He's like, he's not even noticing. Shh. He's going for it because he's really into it, right? Shh. And you're trying to get him to like stop, but he's not. And you're getting more upset. And you know what happened? Now he didn't even listen. He didn't even hear you. He was in his own world, right? What happens to your davening? You were in the beginning of Shemana Esrei. It bothered you a little bit. With a few more shushes. I'm not saying it's permitted to do the shush. I don't think it's permitted to do the shush, but okay. I'm just giving an example, right? Now, after the shush, now you gave up to do the shush. But now it irritates you 10 times more. And when you finish davening, oh boy, is he going to get it, right? What happened here? How did the anger come about? If you understand the non-accepting, even if something which is reasonably acceptable, if you focus on not accepting it, it's going to make it harder for you to accept it. And it's going to spoil your mood, and it's going to create a deeper anger. You understand? And then you're really going to give it to him at the end, right? Now, if you say, okay, this guy, he's doing whatever he's doing. Now, why are you angry? Because he's disturbing my davening. Doesn't he realize he's disturbing my davening? If you think, is he really doing this to disturb my davening? No. Why is he doing it? Because he wants to daven with Kavanah. This is the way he davens with Kavanah. Okay, I don't need to daven with Kavanah by saying it out loud. But maybe this guy does need to daven. Is he doing it to disturb me? No, he's doing it to daven with Kavanah. Does he intend to hurt me in any way? No. So why am I taking it personally? That's the first level of not doing, getting angry about it. That realizing he's not doing it as a personal insult to me. There's other things happening. Now what happens? As soon as I get over that initial hurdle, and I say, look, I'm not going to be able to change it, right? I'm accepting my situation, I'm not going to be able to change it, right? And it's going to be there. You know, how often have you davened and there's been roadworks outside? Right? It didn't disturb you so much. At the beginning you heard it and it like jolted you, but you know you can't stop them from doing their roadworks. It didn't affect you as much. And it's probably much louder. But when a guy goes, says a few things, or moves, or moves his chair, whatever he does, that disturbs you more. Because you feel you have the ability of controlling it. And as soon as you think you have the ability of controlling it, you're getting more upset that you can't control it. So the very fact that you accept your inability to control will remove your anger. Now, when we remove it completely, then you try and get to a stage of a positive attitude to that. What can I learn from that? I can learn, simple thing I can learn is to be more of a savlan. So that's a good thing that comes out from it. Now God's given me an opportunity to daven, even with a guy, and I'll be a savlan. I'll be a person who's, how you say savlan, someone who's who's patient. Now there could be other things so I could be learning from this. You're going to be working one day, some of you, or most of you, right? When you work in your office, you might not have a minion. and you might be davening, and all the people around you are working. I don't know what this funny Jew does. He's moving like a whatever, right? Like a snake in the Gemara, right? He's moving like whatever he's moving, right? They don't understand what you're doing. They don't understand you have to be quiet when you're davening. And there's a little bit of noise around, right? Maybe this was an opportunity for you to practice davening even in difficult situations. And focusing even in difficult situations. So there's always going to be a positive thing if you look for it. And when you see it as a positive thing, just as you do, you know, people do these push-ups or whatever they do, right? Not so much fun, but they do them because they need. I'm going to need these muscles for, I don't know, for picking up my fork. I'm going to need these muscles for whatever reason, right? You're certainly going to need the muscles, your spiritual muscles. That's definitely going to need. I don't know this one, right? Yeah, I guess a beach bucket for whatever. You don't need those when you're yeshiva, right? Okay, Felicity got books. Okay, for whatever. We have a.
Felicity got the
Sefer Torah. Okay, that's. The heavy ones. The very heavy Sefer Torah is right. Okay, yeah. Alright, so we have one. We have a reason for those. You understand what I'm saying? You can. And the same thing is going to be when someone hurts you. Let's go back to where we originally started. When should I stop here? Because I don't know. You guys have Seder now? No? Okay. So, when... What happens when someone hurts you? You feel hurt. You feel angry. Yeah, that's the automatic thing, right? 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 That's the automatic reaction, right? The anger and the attack mode. But now, most times when someone hurts you, usually... It can be, most times, they actually didn't intend to hurt you. It could be this guy's in a bad mood. It could be this guy is like this to most people. Just that you're sensitive about this specific thing, and this guy behaves you this way, and it always gets you upset. So now, what's going to be your attitude to this guy? First thing, first immediate anger is you're hurt, because this guy said something insulting to you. So what do? You react. But if you hold on a little bit. Sometimes you have to have the holding on, the ability to hold on and to think. You say, well, and if you can't think at the time of the anger, it's harder. So just remove yourself from the place, because with people it's much harder. Remove yourself from the place, leave it, and say to yourself, well, is this person really mean to hurt me? Is his intention to hurt me? Or is this the person, let's think about this person. He's in yeshiva, so he must be a decent guy. I mean, he's not, you know, he gave up college life, he gave up whatever he gave up, right? He must be, at least a person who's looking for some level of truth. He must be a decent guy. He's not a guy who wants to hurt people. So maybe he has a problem. I'm not a psychologist, I don't know, but maybe he has a problem. Is he like this to other people? So most of the time the answer is yes. It just said, I'm more sensitive. So first of all, the person doesn't intend to hurt me. That's the first thing. We have to get that conclusion. As soon as we know this person doesn't intend to hurt me, we don't take it personally. As soon as it's not personal, right? We don't get upset. If you go on a bus, right, and a blind person bashes you with his cane, do you get upset? No. But if a person who's not blind bashes you with his cane, you do get upset, right? Right? You said, look where you're going, sir. Or whatever you said. But a blind person, you don't get it. So, in a sense, there are people in their behavior are blind to their behavior. They don't even realize they're doing it. You wouldn't get upset if he was blind. Right? So, that's the first thing that alleviates us of our anger. Right? First thing. Then we go to stage number two. What's stage number two? Huh? Yeah, that's alleviate. Acceptance that, well, yeah, positive. So the positive attitude. Positive attitude, this is going to help me to work on my anger. Then there's a deeper positive attitude. What's a deeper positive attitude? Right? Maybe this is going to be helpful for marriage. Maybe this is going to be helpful with kids. Maybe this is good training for whatever stages in life. I don't know what stages in life I'm going to get, but I told you, once you're married, once you have kids, all your buttons are going to be pressed. So you might as well press a few of them in yeshiva. Right? Right? So it's a good opportunity, because here you have your Rabbi Lin, you have your Rabbi Gershenfeld, you could go and say, Rabbi, I have a problem with X, help me to solve my problem. What's my problem? Why this guy really upsets me? And you think about it, because it might be, usually, Chazal say, Kol HaPosel V'Mumo Posel. Anyone who sees a problem in someone else, it's usually he has an identical problem. Right? There's a non-Jewish writer who wrote a book, I forgot the name of the book, some woman, I forgot what it is, about loving your reality or something like that, or learning, I forgot what the book called. But it's basically based on this Chazal. And it's very true. Usually, if someone pushes your buttons, you usually have the same problem as this guy. So you have to work out what your problem is. You understand? And when you realize what your problem is, he actually did you a favor. You go to all these musavas, Rabbi, please help me, tell me what my problems are. I want to change. Don't we all want to change? This guy did it free. He didn't even have to go to a psychologist. He didn't have to pay $100 an hour, right? He did it for free. It's good. You just a little bit of introspection can make even what seemingly are bad situations into positive experiences. And once you have that positive attitude about life, you won't get angry at me. It's a working opportunity. Now, I'm not saying it's easy. The automatic feeling is anger. So if you do have the anger and you can't control your anger, leave the situation. Go to the toilet. Go to the restroom. Right? That's the word in American, right? You can't. Go to the restroom. Find a place to be and be angry by yourself. Usually people aren't so angry when they're by themselves. Because anger is a way of showing, you can't do this to me. It's a show. It's not something you do by yourself. So that will be like, you know, he'll throw himself, that's like throwing yourself into the water. And then you sit down with a piece of paper and you go through the situation. Is it personal? Does he mean to hurt me? Probably the answer is no. Now if it's yes, then you might need help. If you think the first answer is yes, this person purposely wants to hurt me, then you'll need to speak to someone about it. You need to verify why. Maybe it's something that I do that this person reacts to me. Maybe there's something with me that brings this on this person. That needs a bit more development. Understand what I'm saying? And then you go to your Rabbi Lin, you go to Rabbi Gershwin, you discuss it with them. And you see all the other rabbis. I know which other rabbis do things with you guys here. Right? And you discuss it with them and you come to an attitude. But it can also be a positive experience because it will be definitely teaching you whatever happens will be teaching you something about yourself. Okay? Alright? Alright.